Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Passes, does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It's episode 167. This is the official Red Sox podcast at WEI. Like, rate, subscribe wherever you get in your podcast. Find us on YouTube on the WEI channel. Got the Play Tessie playlist there. All our episodes, thumbs up there if you can. And as always, on the socials, at Play Tessie, both on Twitter and Instagram. Here with Sammy and here with Pat, but we're joined by a very special guest today. Mass Live Zone, covering the Red Sox since 2018. It's Chris Cotillo. Listen to his podcast, Fenway Rundown, wherever you get your podcasts. Take his workshop if you're trying to get into sports journalism.
Spots remain.
Spots always remain. Mm-hmm. Here he is. He just literally fresh off, like immediately fresh off of dropping this Nolan. I mean, today's such a wacky day in Boston sports. You watch the Pats win and get the fourth pick. Celtics lose. Bruins lose. Now this article comes out and we got the man, the myth, the legend right here. So, I mean, God, do you want, first off, just before we get into the Red Sox, because my head's been swimming all day. First off, as the UNC guy in Boston, that's you. Give us your grade on Drake May for the season.
Great. I would say it's been, you know, about a B+. He does, you know, he could have had the same output throwing to the four of us, but he did fine. I mean, I think, you know, he's got a good head on his shoulders. We've seen that, you know, time and time again. Everybody's all excited for Mike Vrabel to come to town. I would say, you know, when you have Ben Johnson, an offensive genius, a fellow Tar Heel who could come in, already has that built-in rapport with, you know, Drake May, why not try that? I mean, everything's pointing in that direction. Drake May with the Patriots, Bill Belichick to Carolina, the Fenway Bowl. What a scene that was. Now Ben Johnson really could finish off the Infinity Stones for the connection. But, yeah, I was pissed they lost today. I mean, they won today. They lost in life. They won the game.
Might as well have lost.
It's just that was a cherry on top of the Sunday that has been the Patriots throughout the last few months. But, you know, brighter days ahead, hopefully. And I think they get the guy to do it. I mean, like I've been saying all year, he had a bad offensive line and middling weapons at Carolina for 2 years. So he was used to kind of what he got in New England. I would say he had better weapons there, where he had Josh Downs and Tez Walker, a couple guys who, you know, Josh Downs is obviously a good NFL receiver. He had good running backs. Hampton should be a first round pick next year. But he had more talent around him at Chapel Hill than he did with the Patriots, probably. He probably had, you know, close to as inept of a coaching staff, maybe a little bit better. Mac Brown is a Hall of Famer. So, you know, I think he gets a pass for the whole year. No one else does.
So I'm a big Patriots fan, but I'm a casual football observer. Who is Ben Johnson?
The Lions offensive coordinator. Yeah,
that's it. Okay,
he's the next young offensive hotshot coming up.
Yeah. Do we want a young guy, or do we want like a salty veteran?
I think it depends who you ask. I'd like someone with experience, but
yeah, I would too. Ben Johnson's like, that guy's an enigma. He fakes falls on plays, Sammy. Last week they scored a touchdown, fake fall down on the snap, and then he just threw it 60 yards downfield for a touchdown.
Yeah, they're creative, they're elite. You know, obviously they have some weapons, but you know, he's obviously coached them up too. So I'd like him or Kingsbury probably, but I think it's gonna be Vrabel.
I do too.
All right. So let's get back to
this has been Play Crazy Train.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to
this. This has been Play Patriots on on WEI, produced by Joe Brady.
Tune in next week and we might talk about baseball. All right, so Nolan Arenado, we've talked about Arenado good amount on the show. We know he's older, 33. The bat is right around average. The defense is still very good. I'm a little so-so on the fit. Chris, what do you think, just fit-wise, money aside, just fit on the roster, what do you think of Nolan Arenado on the Red Sox?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they need to get right-handed and they need better infield defense. He's a right-handed bat who would play at Fenway, and he is probably the greatest infield defender of our, you know, generation, along with his high school teammate there. So, you know, even, you know, getting to a point where, you know, he's a little older now, I still think it, you know, makes your team better if you have a need at that position, and they don't. You know, I think that's a big, you know, piece of this to me. I've always said since the beginning of the offseason, I think it's just trying to do too much where you're moving Arenado to third or Bregman to third, moving Devers across the diamond. You don't know how that's going to go, and trading Casas. And, you know, like, I'm a big Casas guy. I think that they haven't gotten the best out of him. I think he has the chance to be elite on our pod. Fenway Rundown, check it out. Sean McAdam and I, like, argue all the time about who would you rather have or who you'd rather trade between Duran and Casas. And to me, as good as Duran was and his year was historically good, I'd rather have Casas moving forward. I know he's a little younger, but I think the upside is there. I know the defense doesn't play like it would in the outfield for Duran, but this guy has the chance to be a middle-of-the-order bat for a really, really long time. The way he goes about it, the preparation, the process, how cerebral he is about hitting, the willingness to adjust. I know some of it can come off as annoying or weird or unconventional, but like, he's a guy who's totally committed to it. He wants the bag, right? He wants a big extension. He's not in the position where he's going to get that now. He's motivated by that, motivated by, you know, doing his best. And he's not a guy that I ever think the work ethic would, you know, fail. I don't think he's injury prone or soft. I think that you know, injury last year, he got a bad rap for, even though it was probably the most painful thing any of us would ever go through in our lives by far. So I wouldn't trade him personally, but I do think they look at that as a place where, you know, they can try to get creative. To me, it's like you need A and B and C and D and E to work out for this plan to all come together, whether it be Bregman or thinking about Willy Adames a couple months ago, and I think there's people in the organization that want one of these things to happen. To me, again, it's just, you know, a lot of contingencies need to happen. You need to win the Casas trade, where there's a good chance you don't, you know, because you get somebody that's not worth what he's going to give you for the next 4 or 5 years. You have to, you know, have Devers be a good defensive first baseman. He's never done it before. Like, what confidence is there in that? Plus, you're pissing him off, you know, no way around that. And I know he's an employee of the Red Sox, but he's your most important player and your highest paid. And, you know, you have to make sure Arenado's not declining. You're going to make sure Bregman is worth the investment. There's just like, you know, if Walker Buehler doesn't work out, you know, in this 1 year, like you took the swing for 1 year on a high AAV deal, there's only one thing. There's only kind of one, you know, peg that has to work out there. Here, it's like, you know, so many things that have to fit together. And I just think you're trying to do a little too much when, if you leave Devers at third, you leave Casas at first, you have, you know, potentially elite offensive production from the two of them. I know they're both left-handed, but to me, just leave it and leave it be.
Yeah. And then my kind of follow-up on that is going back all the way to the beginning of the Soto sweepstakes, Breslow has been pretty vocal about, you can't just have a plan A. We have a plan A, B, so on, so forth. This news with Arenado, like, yes, it's big because, you know, if they made that move, he'd be willing. But in terms of their ranks of plans, do you think he's even A or B? Or do you think they're kind of in a different couple of spots right now, and then down the road, maybe they get to an Arenado?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, from what we just reported, like, there's no indication that anything is imminent, super close, that they're, you know, the most likely team. It's just, we've seen that this is an important step that he has to approve the trade, and he's not one of these guys that's just going to prove it approve it anywhere because he's sick of St. Louis. You know, like St. Louis is a great baseball town. He's clearly been there a few years, comfortable. He didn't want to go to Houston for whatever reservations he had there. And so he's a guy that's going to weigh all of these options. And an older guy, like, you don't want to, you know, uproot your family and all that type of stuff and uproot your life. The fact he's willing to come here is definitely a checked box for the Red Sox. It doesn't mean anything is close. And you know, like, based on what people have said and what people have written and what people have heard, like, the Bregman thing doesn't seem like that's particularly close either. To me, you know, the cleaner fit is an outfielder, a guy you can cycle in at DH. You know, I know he's not as an attractive as a name or a big name, but like a guy like Grichik positionally fits the roster to me a little bit better than a Bregman or, you know, an Arenado, even though they're better players, just because of the moving parts. At the end of the day, you want the most complete thing. At this juncture in the offseason, I find it hard to believe they're going to pull one of those off. So it was always Teoscar to me. I think I've been pretty clear on that. I think he was the number one, far and away should have been the target. I don't think they made him an offer. I don't know why. He went back to the Dodgers, obviously, and now it's kind of all these options that are, you know, not as good in my mind. But I think they're going to still, you know, keep trying to add a bat. They kind of have to, because if you're betting on Trevor Story to be your main right-handed bat and guys like, you know, Rafaela and Grissom and Wong, I think you're leaving something to be desired there.
I think for me with the offense, it is about balancing the lineup, and they keep talking about balancing the lineup. But for me, it's also about, you know, you got to replace the production of the guy you just lost in Tyler O'Neill, one of the best lefty mashers in baseball last year. And I like Arenado. I think he'd be a good fit on the roster. This is a guy that at least among the three of us, we were talking about at the end of last year as like, would this be a guy that would work? But the way I see it is it only works if you get rid of one of Devers, Costas, Yoshida. My preference would be Yoshida. Obviously, yep. Doesn't feel like that's possible unless you DFA'd, which personally I'm not in favor of. But let's say they do this sequence and they trade for Nolan Arenado, and in a separate deal, they trade Tristan Casas. I just think they're a worse offensive team there. So do you think there's a chance that if they do that, do you think there's a chance that after that, or in addition to that, they would maybe get another outfielder? You talked about Randall Grichik. I know in your last article, you talked about Seiya Suzuki. Like, do you think maybe a second right-handed bat could be possible? Or do you think if they made a move like that, that would be the move for the offense?
Yeah, I think that would probably be the move, you know, for the offense, just because you do have Ref Snyder who can mash lefties. He's not your, you know, power profile like some of these guys, but he is on the roster and he's still going to start against lefties all the time. You're betting on Campbell to come up and give you some production from that side too. I always went into this offseason and said they don't need to do a ton, but they need to do something big at the spots where they need to do it, right? Like an ace, which they did. You know, I would have been fine with the rotation of Crochet and what they had. Obviously, they weren't, so they got Buehler, which I liked. And now it's a bat and relief help. I still think they'll add a reliever, and I do think they're going to add some sort of bat here. So, you know, doing something where, you know, they get Arenado and Bregman, I think, is probably, you know, too much in terms of money. It doesn't sound like the Cardinals are going to take back a ton in any deal, and he still is, you know, owed. I think you're on the hook for, you know, at least $20 million a year over the next 3 years. You add that to what Bregman's asking for, it's kind of a lot. And, you know, that's a lot of shuffling, and you're starting to block the guys you have coming up too. So I think they're, you know, one bat away. Maybe you see something creative where, you know, they trade Abreu for a right-handed bat to try to balance it out. Again, sometimes it just feels like you're doing too much. And so that's, again, I hate to harp on this. It's why I think Teoscar was such a clean fit and a guy that kind of fit the window and everything. And you could put it DH, you know, secondarily O'Neill too, like on the market with the guys they have. I think I would have ranked them Teoscar 1, O'Neill 2 in terms of who makes the most sense out of all these pieces. Is O'Neill as good or a complete player as Bregman? No, but he just fits the roster. And we've seen, I think, you know, the Red Sox have had rosters in the last few years that just don't fit together well, you know, and Yoshida is kind of the poster child for that. You know, as you mentioned, I think just a DFA of him. I wrote about that in the predictions column and people were like, oh, that's blasphemous. It's way too early. But, you know, a big market team might just swallow the mistake and say, we're going to pay this guy. He's going to go elsewhere, whether he gets claimed or, you know, goes down to AAA or whatever. And we, you know, need a righty in that spot. That's what they probably should have been doing. They're just not ready to cut bait then. Obviously, not a lot of trade value coming off the injury and the bad season, so, or up and down season, I should say. So they're in a weird spot where it's like nothing at this point fits in perfectly. And so I think, you know, when you're looking at all these different contingencies, all these different options, you know, maybe they're trying to fit the square peg into the round hole, but, you know, really only got a month or 5 weeks to do it.
So, Chris, you're talking before about your and Sean's arguments of over Durant and Costas, and I always resonate with you on those. And I don't like to do the either or with those guys because I want them both on the team. I think there's ways to build the roster with both, and obviously the roster right now has both guys. But Tristan Costas, I see as a middle of the order bat for years to come. 30 plus bombs a year, maybe 40 once or twice over the span of until he hits free agency. And I've been harping on the don't trade Costas train from the jump this offseason. I'm not going to stop until he's either traded or the season starts. Why do you think we keep hearing these trade rumors with Tristan Costas? Why do you think they're so willing to move a potential middle of the order 30 plus homer bat when it doesn't feel like, at least at the major league level right now, they have another one of those besides him and Devers?
I think their projections probably have a lot of these other guys being better than him, which is all well and good, but they haven't done it. You know, I talked about this, I think on our pod the other day or somewhere. It's like, to me, I think the prospect loving world we're in has gotten to a point where, and this is throughout the game and then through outsiders like us too, no offense, we all are, just that like people love, you know, Roman Anthony and they love Christian Campbell and they love Meyer to a lesser extent right now, but they do, and Kyle Teal and all these guys and the password and all these guys that, oh my God, like none of these guys have given you a second in the major leagues, not through any fault of their own. But there's something to be said for Willie Abreu going out and doing it over the course of a full season in 6 weeks. There's something to be said about Tristan Costas proving in the second half of last year or 2023 that he could be, you know, one of the best hitters in baseball and show that he can hit major league pitching and do what he has. Like, there's guys that check every box all the way up and then can't. I'm not saying Roman Anthony or Christian Campbell projects to be one of those guys, but we can't rule it out. And so, you know, I do think some teams value that. That might be why you'd be willing to trade a guy like Costas, where, you know, a team that's not, you know, willing to do the White Sox long rebuild where they're looking for four prospects just wants a guy that, you know, has proven it and can slot in now. And I think because he's left-handed. And I also think that there is probably a faction of people within the Red Sox that everything that comes with Tristan Costas annoys. And that, I think, is just the reality of it. I don't think that should really, you know, be the case. I think last year throughout the season, I don't know if they wanted him to come back sooner with an injury that serious. I think they wish he talked about it less, you know, and the knives and guns, right? Like, I was there with Bradford that day when he went through that whole thing. And, you know, Rob's been on the record about, like, we talked to him, went up to the press box to write it. And then, you know, he talked to the people in Worcester and gave that quote and said completely the opposite of what he was saying to us. And like that pissed off Alex Cora. He said that weekend in Texas. Right. And it irritated, you know, the Red Sox. And in a culture, in a world of baseball where you're, as a young player, supposed to just, you know, shut up and do your job. I wonder if there's people in the Red Sox front office that think like, yeah, he's talented, but he's a headache. Other than that, he's going to be a headache to try to extend. He's going to talk to the media too much. Maybe teammates think that too. I think that's ridiculous. I think the guy can be an elite player. And I'm also biased because he's phenomenal for business as a media member. So we're also biased in that way. But I think that's a real thing. And I think that there's people in the organization that might think that way. I don't think it's right, but I think it might be true.
Oh, okay. I can't even think straight because I've made myself angry thinking about the Red Sox announcing Randall Grichuk and then explaining how he's the right hit. Okay. I don't even want to go there. I want to talk about Yoshida. You kind of just alluded to, you don't think Cardinals would, you know, take on his money. Do you think there is a scenario that exists where the Red Sox can offload Masataka Yoshida? And I have to reiterate this, not because he's a bad player, but because he's not a great fit. Is there a team that would accommodate the Red Sox in moving him?
I mean, you know, there's always a path if you're willing to attach a prospect. And, like, that's a scary thing to say. You know, that Castillo for Casas and Yoshida deal, I probably wouldn't have done, not because Castillo's bad, but just because I think it's, you know, probably an overpay when you have to, you know, have Casas to offload Yoshida. You know, if you give up, like, the guy who almost made perfect sense is no longer in the organization. But instead of using Nick York's trade value for another change of scenery guy like Quinn Priester, use a guy with Nick York's value, attach him to Masataka Yoshida, and see where it can get you, you know, in terms of getting something back. You know, like, there are kind of creative salary dumps like that that happen. You know, if there's a team out there that has a lot of swing and miss, which the Red Sox do, and not a lot of lefties, and has a DH opening or a good team that could use a part-time player like that, maybe. You know, I think one that made some sense in my head that I'm really explored before they added the starters was Yoshida for Jordan Montgomery. Change of scenery, big contract next year, that type of stuff. Obviously, I don't think that's super likely now. But I think they've been exploring this for a really long time. I think they were willing to do it all of last offseason. I'm sure they talked about it at the trade deadline, and they've been talking about it clearly over the last couple months, and they have not found a taker. And I think it makes sense that they haven't, too, because if you look at it, it's not just the salary, which isn't, it's not like $40 million going to ruin your whole payroll, but it is, you know, significant. And also, it's like, you know, you can't expect anything in the field. You can't expect anything base running wise. The power is limited. He was horrendous against lefties. And that, I think, is the biggest thing, the biggest knock on him last year, is that he was horrible against lefties when he's a guy that, you know, so they weren't playing him against lefties. So now you're down to, you know, not an insulting way to put it, just the truth, you're down to a half of a tool out of the five, because you take away the defense, so that's two. You take away the base running, which is three. The power is not really there, and he can only hit lefties. He can hit righties at an elite level, and we saw that throughout the year. There's a team where that skill set perfectly fits, maybe, and then you add in an injury that's not a minor thing, you know. And I think the Red Sox didn't do a great job handling or talking about or explaining to the public slash us the injury stuff last year either. I think, you know, there's a real case to be made that I believe what he said to the Japanese media on the last day of the season is he hurt his shoulder during spring training. That's why he didn't play the field. Alex Cora adamantly all year up until the end of the year, he didn't play the field because we had better options, you know. Well, there was days where Bobby Dalbec played the outfield, and there were days where Romy Gonzalez played the outfield, right? Like, there's, you know, so I don't really care about those excuses. But, you know, clearly they saw the body of work in left field the first year and thought, we can't do this again. And now you add the injury into it, and I just think it's just a real depreciated asset. He thought he'd be much better than this. And he has had moments. He's had some big hits, and he can hit righties really well. But, you know, in a game where, you know, versatility is super valuable and tools are super valuable, you know, that's why you look at a guy like David Hamilton is a lot more valuable than a guy like Masataka Yoshida, right? Can play pretty good defense up the middle. He's not a great offensive player, but he can run. He can play different positions. Maybe they try him in the outfield down the road. I know he's done that in the minors. Like, that's just an example of a guy who is not a world beater by any means, but in today's game, he checks a lot of the boxes, and Yoshida is, you know, not versatile and, you know, obviously comes with a lot of limitations and the injury that'll scare teams off.
So we've talked a lot about the right-handed bat. Another component of the roster that Brez has really hinted at a lot is that maybe other relief. And I don't know about Gordo and Sammy. I think we've talked about it. I don't think any of us see them getting a Tanner Scott ponying up that amount of cash. Maybe not even a Hoffman. But we were talking before you came on about a Yates, a Robertson, a Minter. Where do you kind of fall in that? What level of reliever, if they do add, would they add?
I think that we're at a point now where, you know, the relief market is one where every team's always involved because every team can use an extra reliever. But the fact that we're on, you know, at January 5th and that market hasn't moved at all, I think you're going to be able to get some bargains, you know, and some guys are going to, you know, not get what they thought they were going to at the beginning of the offseason. You know, the guys you mentioned, but then you even add, like, you know, for all the controversy and everything, friend of every program, Kenley Jansen's still out there. He had a pretty good year and a pretty good 2 years in Boston, and he'd really help a team. You know, Chris Martin showed elite flashes throughout, you know, obviously 2 years ago, the whole year, and this year. Like, those guys are, you know, out there too. There's a lot of guys. One thing that I think where I draw the line on this, I know that a lot of these guys can get both righties and lefties out. To me, the Red Sox, I think, are probably, I'm going to guess, done with lefties, which would rule out on Scott and Minter because they have so many. You know, they're comfortable enough with the amount of left-handed depth that they have that they traded, you know, Boozer for a guy that's, you know, in rookie ball. They traded, or they DFA'd Horn, who obviously was not very good last year, but a guy that, you know, was on the 40-man. You know, where you have Bernardino, who's been your number one option at times and has been good, as your number three option now. Behind him, Penrod. Between, you know, it's not just Chapman. Obviously, people forget about Justin Wilson. He's guaranteed a roster spot. He's like 52 years old. He's going to be on the roster. So Justin Wilson, Aroldis Chapman, Bernardino, Penrod, maybe Chris Murphy later in the year. I think you can come up with two or three lefties out of that group on any given day. And so for that, Minter and Scott, less likely. Somebody like Hoffman or somebody, you know, like Yates or David Robertson, who also is in his 50s, I would say. Fit really well. I mean, so does Chris Martin too, if you want to, you know, do that for his probably last year in baseball. There's a lot of guys, you know, who are like that. And you can just, you know, kind of go down the list of, you know, top free agents. And really, other than, you know, Clay Holmes and kind of that weird deal, Estevez is still available, who people don't talk about, who was really, really good last year. Andrew Kittredge and, you know, Canely is still available, who the Red Sox have been linked to every single time he's been out there. Spencer Turnbull, Seawald. There's a lot of guys out there where, you know, it's going to be hard, honestly, not to land one, I think, because of the way that the market has, you know, kind of developed and the way it's gone so far. But I don't think they're far off from, you know, hate to use the word, an elite bullpen, because if you look at, you know, between Hendricks, Slayton, Whitlock, Wilson and Chapman in the back end, you're going to find somebody who's great in the ninth inning. You're going to find someone who's good in the eighth. And then think about all the guys who have a ton of upside. Kelly still obviously has a ton of upside that you just ran him into the ground last year. Guerrero, you know, showed a lot down the stretch. Weissert's a different look. You know, Winkowski's didn't have a great year, but is still on the roster. You know, even like some of the non-roster guys they have. Penrod is on the roster, throws hard. I think they have a lot of depth and a lot of guys. Bernardino, like we talked about, that Cora can move up and down. You add one more guy to that group, and I think, you know, you're looking pretty good with what they've done so far.
Yeah, and I think we'd obviously, you know, the fan base would love to see them shop at the top of that market. But you really, I agree with you, Chris, that you don't need to get, and obviously they have lefties, but you don't need to get that dominant Tanner Scott. Like Tommy Canely, I agree, like that's a guy that you've seen them talk to all, like, what, this is now the third free agency that he's had, and they've been connected both times before. But they could get a guy like that. They're about $27 million under the luxury tax. And I guess that brings me to where I want to go here about Sam Kennedy's comments. And I know you lead the train on ownership should be willing to talk about where they're going to be on payroll. And by God, this year, it took them a little bit of time, but they did it. And it was great. It was great to hear them talk about what their intentions were spending wise. It was great to hear that they were open to going over the luxury tax, but now they're around $27 million under, and there are fits on the free agent market that could launch this team into not just like playoff contention, but potentially top of the American League contention. And as you said earlier in the podcast, it doesn't feel like the Alex Bregman thing is gaining a lot of steam right now. And I just, why do you think Sam Kennedy said they were open to going over the luxury tax to do what they needed to do to get where they were going to go? And now it doesn't really feel like that's going to happen.
Because I think if Max Fried accepted their offer, then they would probably be over the luxury tax. And then they pivoted and got Crochet, who's going to cost them $3 million. So, I mean, I actually, as much as I was banging the drum last year, and people are going to say, oh, Henry got to him, like, he has no idea who I am. But, like, they're, you know, I think that their top options were going out and spending a ton of money, Soto. If he had accepted the deal, they'd be way over the luxury tax. So, yeah, they were open to it. If Fried had accepted the deal, you know, it's not a coincidence that they were legitimately, when they got to the winter meetings, had not made a formal offer and exchange names on Crochet. Fried signs, and all of a sudden they text and say, hey, you know, we'll do Braden Montgomery, Kyle Teal, Mydroth, and Gonzalez, and that got the deal done. Like, the White Sox had a price that was met. The Red Sox hadn't even gotten to that point, and then they got the deal done. But they weren't an aggressor on Crochet before Fried signed. And so, you know, like, I think that if those guys had accepted their offers, they would have gone past if it fit the roster well. As much as I said they need to go out and spend last year, I think that if they fill their holes this year and they're under the luxury tax, then I'm not going to fault them as much, because Garrett Crochet is not going to get you over the luxury tax, but he might be, you know, the best pitcher you could have acquired. So I don't equivocate those two things. It's just the way you acquired. Like, they were super aggressive. I tweeted and I got a ton of shit for it at the moment. This is a massive haul that they gave up. Yeah, I think it was a fair price, but it was a massive haul. That's the price of doing business. They could afford to do it. They have those guys. So, like, whether they gave Fried $190 million, he accepted it, or whether they made that deal for Crochet, that was a full throttle move. Let's go back to that terminology. Either way. So if they get, you know, if this offseason ends with Crochet, Buehler, a legitimate bat, you know, who knows how that's going to be, and a couple good relievers, Chapman, maybe a righty type, and Justin Wilson, and they're below the luxury tax, I don't see how you can really be that upset. But they're not there yet, you know, because they haven't gotten, you know, the bat especially, and I think one more reliever would go a long way. So that's, I think when you go out and you make the biggest trade in baseball and you give up four good players, including two top 100 prospects, just because Crochet is at a point in his career where he's making, you know, not $25 million, I don't think we should punish them for that. But
no, I agree. I agree with you, Chris.
It gives them a lot of room to spend, which they haven't done yet. And I think part of that's lack of roster fit. Again, for the eighth time, Teoscar for $25 million a year would have made so much sense. Part of that's roster fit. Part of it is I don't think that they are being as cheap as they were last year. I think the market's just played out in a different way. Last year, they had limitations. They were not willing to go past, and their biggest move was Lucas Giolito. You know, this year, they've made, you know, two moves that are probably bigger than that, with Buehler and obviously Crochet. The Crochet move came in a different way. But if this is all they do, then I think it's right to criticize them for not spending too.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It really isn't about where the payroll goes, but the issue is that if you look at the roster right now, the offense, glaring to me that it's incomplete. And, you know, obviously if they get an Arenado, or if they get a Grichik, or even if they get both, the argument can still be made that they don't have that guy. And I was going to say that guy to fit in between Devers and Casas, but if you trade Casas in the process, now you're down even more middle of the order bats. I don't know. I'm nervous about the offense. I think that's just where it's coming from. And, you know, it feels like the simplest, easiest move would be to just sign Alex Bregman. You put him at second base. You put Christian Campbell in left field when he's ready to go. You've got your guy for in the middle of Devers and Casas, and you ride, because you make that addition. And guess what? You're at the top of the American League. But it doesn't. I don't know. Maybe you can elaborate on this, but it doesn't feel like maybe the front office is fully sold on Bregman, and maybe that's why it didn't move forward. Maybe, I mean, because I know you guys wrote about how it was Alex Cora and Sam Kennedy in on Bregman, and it was Breslow who was hesitant. So maybe it's not coming from ownership saying you can't spend this much on the guy. Maybe it's just Breslow and company don't think that Bregman's that guy. But it does feel to me like that would be the easiest, you know, plug and play middle of the order guy.
Yeah, I was, you know, Team Mass Live, happy to take all the credit in the world for that report, which was Sean's, until I realized how pissed the Red Sox were about it in the story that they that Spear ran. And now I want to make clear that it was Sean McAdam and Sean McAdam's reporting alone. But all completely true and accurate, and kind of the realities of how those free agent pursuits go sometimes. Alex Cora, gung-ho on the player, you know. Sam Kennedy clearly was too, and there's reservations in the front office. You know, there's split camps on a lot of guys. I don't think this is a, you know, a rare case where that was, but as of the winter meetings, like, there were some people that said this should be our big pivot, and there were some people that said no, I have my hesitations. And I'm kind of, like, personally there on both ends of that too. You know, part one, I think that he provides leadership. I think he provides something that they don't really have in terms of that championship pedigree. I think Buehler is going to be big on that end on the pitching staff. I think he'd be great as the adult in the room type of thing. And it's a phrase that's very apt for what this team needs. At the same time, I don't think he's a perfect fit, because if you're going to promise him second base for the next 5 years or moving him around, to me, you're giving up on Vaughn Grissom. You're giving up on David Hamilton, probably, which, you know, maybe that's the right thing to do, but you're kind of guaranteeing that. And you're making a very crowded mix with Story and Meyer and Campbell even more crowded. And I think Bregman's a guy that's, you know, kind of regressed defensively or offensively too in the last few years, and a guy that's probably the bat's not going to play as well away from Minute Maid. So I'd almost lean, you know, in a vacuum, Arenado over him, in a positional fit. If I take him at second base over all the moving parts we talked about, I don't think either of them are perfect. And that's why I thought there was path of less resistance for them. But I just, you know, that there has been that disagreement within kind of the decision makers about what Bregman would bring. And I think, you know, there's valid points on either side.
So this is the perfect transition. The vibe of the offseason from the outside, all of us looking in from the last, let's say, 2-3 off seasons has been gross. We saw it at winter weekend ownership. What was that, 2023? Goes up on stage for the first time since like 1982 or whatever. Last time people saw John Henry, they got booed to the high heavens, deservedly so. The next year, smaller group, still a lot of boos, more boos too. And yeah, just weird. Pretty negative negative aura surrounding the Red Sox. Does the vibe feel the same, different? Is it changing? What's your read on the general vibe around the Red Sox brass right now, emotionally?
So, a quick story, personal side. One of my college roommates had his bachelor party the weekend of that big winter weekend where everybody got booed off the stage, and we were at a comedy show. No phones were allowed, and I got out of it and was like, "Oh my god, this is what's happening in Springfield!" Like, I was totally removed, totally off, and like, you think, oh, you miss a winter weekend, like it's fun to be there, but whatever. It's not going to be like, not like crazy stuff's going to happen, and it ended up being really a, you know, kind of a touch point moment in all of this. And you know, it's funny, like, just the one you miss is always that one. But I always think back to that, like, yeah, it's fine, it's just a Friday winter weekend, what could possibly happen? That happened. I think to answer your question, you know, the last off season I think the anger was more because Full Throttle and the changing of the guard and all that stuff was just so bad in every way. It was so out of touch, and people were you know, rightly upset. And it was such a slow drip of, you know, I remember, you know, this is not a patting myself on the back thing, but I remember, you know, that story I wrote about the Red Sox are telling free agents that they need to move money before they can spend. And the initial reaction from Pete, which ended up being kind of like the turning point of the offseason when people started realizing, and the initial reaction was like, well, there's no way that's true. And you know what? As a reporter learning that information, I also thought that, because I also thought there was no way it would possibly be true. And then as it bore out, it was like, well, there's a lot of guys out there late. They're going to, you know, flip. They're going to flip. They're going to get Montgomery. They're going to sign Snell. They're going to go do something. And it just never materialized. And it was a very deflating start to end from, you know, October 30th, whatever, with Full Throttle, through winter weekend where they finally admit payroll is going to be down, through, you know, some of the underwhelming things that they did, through spring training when those guys finally signed. It was deflating, it was disappointing, and it was, I think, you know, a 0 out of 10 offseason for them. You know, at once, I mean, the O'Neill, in terms of public perception, the O'Neill move worked out. I actually liked the Giolito signing. I think that was kind of a bad break. Obviously, the Sale trade wasn't great. It was, you know, there was good moves, bad moves, like there always are. But from a public perception standpoint, as bad as it could have gotten. This year, I think it's cool to be super pissed off about them now, especially on a place like X or Twitter. I'm not going to call it X because I hate that. I think it's the default is just the toxic negativity where, you know, they're cheap, they're not going to spend, because we've seen that. And I still think, you know, last year at this time, because of what I was hearing, I think we could judge the entire, I think I at this point would said the movie's over. Now we can give you the review because they've added Giolito and O'Neill. They traded Verdugo and they traded Sale. And that's it. There's not much more coming because they're telling teams and players we don't have the money, right? So it's over. I think it's too early right now. And I think, as I've said, I think, you know, the start of the offseason with Crochet and Buehler and to a baseball on the baseball side, Chapman, he helps your team. Like, I think the pitching staff is a lot better. The rotation's a lot better. I still think there's moves to be made. I think there's too much outrage, and I think the vibe is a little too negative out there right now. This is me saying this, okay? I think the vibe is a little too negative out there considering what they've done. I mean, you can't underestimate how big the Garrett Crochet trade is. It's an all-in move. You know, Walker Buehler, people get upset because it's not a 7 or 8 year deal. I mean, you know, it's a big sum of money for a guy that did what he did last year, and it could pay off huge, you know? So I think the vibe is a little too negative for what it is. I was going to say, it'll be interesting to see on Saturday what, you know, the vibe around there is. I don't think this event has any traction at all. I'll be there. I'm sure what? You guys will be there, but yeah, I don't think anybody see there. Really knows, you know, and it's one day and it's, you know,
it's cold.
They have a good player lineup, but that's kind of about it. And the price is too much, even though you do get a ticket for April and May when you can get them on StubHub for $3 anyway. I think that
maybe,
it's just,
maybe they'll talk to you about it at a later date, according to the Red Sox.
Oh, good. So
wait, what do you mean by that, Sammy?
You get a free ticket voucher, but like you don't know when the game is or who it's against, and the Red Sox will figure it out later is basically what the website says. Huh. I'll get you the verbiage later. It's bizarre.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, I feel like they needed to do something, and, you know, Springfield was becoming a money loser. They signed that corporate partnership with MGM. They couldn't do it at Foxwoods anymore. You know, Foxwoods was great. People seemed to like that. Obviously, the team was better then. So, you know, we'll see if there's any, you know, I don't think Garrett Crochet and Walker Buehler are going to get introduced at the MGM Music Hall and get booed, right? So they've kind of, you know, changed the event to where they can't get booed because they're not taking the questions. But I think the vibe's a little too negative for where it is right now. If the roster is what it is right now, when they open camp in 5 weeks, it's still, you know, probably better than it was a year ago, right? With just the guys they've gotten, but not enough. And I still think that's where, you know, one or two more moves comes into play.
Pat, you're muted, buddy.
That's so
look at this guy. He looks so serious.
So incredibly.
It's all right. It's only been 5 years since COVID, so people aren't really understanding the mute on mute thing yet.
Thanks, kid. So I already thing. I don't think that they've made any bad moves. Like, I've actually been a fan genuinely. The Chapman, like you said, kind of the baseball side of it, I am a fan of it. But Buehler, Crochet, so far so good. As currently constructed, there's been so much turnover in the AL. The Yankees obviously lose Soto. They bring in Goldschmidt, Bellinger, Devin Williams, Fried. Houston loses Bregman and Fried. Where do you kind of put them as currently constructed in the landscape of the AL?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's teams that, you know, Baltimore loses Burns, but it's still going to be super competitive and really good. You know, the Yankees, one of my best friends is a Yankees fan, and I was down there. Carolina played at MSG a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about just the offseason stuff, and he was made kind of convince me that, you know, you don't want to lose Juan Soto, but as a Yankees fan, he kind of rather have the four you talked about and Fried and Williams and Goldschmidt and Bellinger than Juan Soto, which is interesting, yeah. And I think there's actually a case to be made on that. I think Toronto's probably going to make a move or two. You know, Santander seems like a guy that fits, maybe a Bregman. You know, you got to think about all the other teams that, you know, made it, and they have the young cores, right, in the American League. Cleveland, you know, Cleveland, Detroit, and Kansas City, three teams that made the playoffs, not a lot of star power other than, you know, Jose Ramirez and Witt in that division. But, you know, teams that knew how to play, they played together, the parts fit together, and that's something. You know, Seattle, their rotation is still going to be elite. Maybe they may go out and make a move. So I think there's a lot of teams that are kind of right in that mix. You know, obviously the Yankees were the class of the league last year, and they've, you know, gotten kind of more complete, I think, with the team, with the moves they made, even losing Soto. And the American League East, you know, I always say, I still think the Yankees and the Orioles are the two teams to beat. The Red Sox have kind of closed the gap, especially, you know, I like Baltimore's Charlie Morton, immortal signing. It's probably not going to be Burns, but he's a guy that, you know, has proven all that type of stuff, and I expect them to do a little bit more. I think O'Neal will be good for them too. Now they moved the fence in from, you know, the other, whatever other state it was in. It was in Delaware last year. And then, you know, the Rays to me are a team now that, you know, where things went wrong for them last year is their staff of 10 no-name aces, all of them got hurt, you know, and they have a lot of guys that are really, really good to the point where they could trade Springs and, you know, I can't even name, you know, who they still have in the rotation, but, you know, because I don't even know who's healthy and who's not at this point because they're all, you know, kind of rehabbing at different points. But when you look at, you know, McClanahan and Taj Bradley, and then Rasmussen's been a guy who's had success, and all these different people they've had, you know, come in and out, they are going to find a way with their platoons and all that stuff. They're never going to be, you know, last year was a down year. I don't expect that going forward. And Toronto, like, they're a team that obviously has wanted to be in on all these guys with Soto and Ohtani and all that stuff. But this is kind of the window, right, with Vladdy and Bichette and these guys. So maybe, you know, they get aggressive. And if they're in it at the deadline, they're going to go way all in, especially if they don't have that Vladdy deal. So it's a competitive division for sure. You know, to me, the division, people always talk about, you know, where you finish in the division, all that stuff. Really, to me, with the expanded playoffs, it's where you finish in the league. Because we've seen these three-game series kind of go haywire in the last few years. You know, the Red Sox are in that, you know, probably second tier behind the two or three elite teams of a lot of teams that are good. You know, you throw, like I said, those AL Central teams in there. You know, who knows what the Twins are going to be on an every-year basis. They have a lot of talent, too, even though they're maybe taking a step back. You know, the Angels are always a wild card to me, but the Mariners, the Rangers still, you know, maybe after a down year, there's kind of that vast middle in the American League, where, you know, I probably characterize it as, you know, the Yankees and the Orioles and then the pack, and the Red Sox are, you know, the middle slash front of that secondary pack right now. But there is a lot of room before we get to opening day too.
Yeah. And that's really why the next five or so weeks is so important. And the Red Sox really have a chance to make this an American League that they can win. But we appreciate you jumping on with us, Chris. You going cutoff hoodie next week, Fenway Fest?
I'm not, no. But I am already convincing my friend group that we have to do everything we can to be there at the opener against TCU and on Labor Day. It's going to be apparently the Monday night primetime game at home. And I just feel like, you know, we owe it to our alma mater to do so. My thoughts on the Belichick thing, as I think I tweeted this, if you put me in control of the universe for a full day, Belichick at UNC would have been done in the first 5 minutes. So the fact that it came to real life, I was shocked. But, you know, it's a pipe dream that came true.
It's kind of like Garrett Crochet to the Red Sox for me. I've been talking about that since like August to these guys. Like,
and they happen within an hour of each other. Actually, I was at, so
this, they really?
This is the way it always happens. And and at the winter meetings are in busy time. So, you know, we staggered our, so McAdam and I went, Smith stayed home. Sean staggered because he did the GM meetings. So Sean was leaving Wednesday afternoon. So right before the Rule 5 draft, he's, you cover the Rule 5 draft, you'll be all set. I'll be on the plane. I was flying home Thursday afternoon from Dallas, so we weren't in the air at the same time, and we'd always have two people on the ground. It's like, you know, how they scatter the cabinet during the State of the Union, basically. So we were, you know, Sean leaves for the airport. I'm walking to the Rule 5 draft. I get in the Rule 5 draft room to see, you know, if the Red Sox were going to lose Bastardo or whatever the hell. And I see a Red Sox executive who had been texting me all week, like, is this Belichick thing really happening? Is this Belichick thing really happening? And I was like, yeah, I think so. Like, I'm, you know, my people in Chapel Hill, the guys that cover the team, think it's happening. And, you know, the whole, like, Schefter hasn't caught up, but they think it's a done deal, all this stuff. And so I walk up to this Red Sox executive in the Rule 5 draft room. Now, they've got the deal for Crochet done, and it's not public yet. Of course, I don't know. And I go up to him, and I go, wow, this thing's done. Unbelievable. I got it done, or it's done, done deal. And he goes, like, give me this look. And then he goes, oh, you're talking about Belichick. I said, yeah. What do you think I was talking about? He goes, oh, And then like Julian tweeted out the crocheted deal like three minutes later.
So Julian got it. I was going to say Julian somehow got it out of him.
Right.
Well, and you were this close. It's like that meme with the guy mining and then he stops in the gym.
You got to give him shit.
Yeah, well,
that's your scoop.
I know. I was so focused on the other thing at that point that I didn't really care. And
Bastardo,
then...
you were thinking Bastardo.
Yeah.
What if
thinking about Bastardo
in that scenario? If he had slipped and thought you were talking crochet, like would you just?
Like, I probably would have tweeted it. Yeah, I probably would have tweeted it immediately.
Wouldn't have been like embargo. No,
those don't exist for transactions like that. Only for when they announce the Netflix documentary.
Oh yeah, fancy. Well,
we appreciate it though, man. Thank you so much for jumping on with us. We're gonna see you at Fenway Fest. We're all gonna be there. So we'll see you at Fenway Fest. We'll see you at the ballpark during the season. Maybe at spring training. We'll see if we line up at spring training. But
sounds good. Good times ahead, man. I just want to make sure that you're all comfortable with your wonderful producer. That one Northboro native and Algonquin Tomahawks never enough in the room for these podcasts.
Oh my God, that's right! Didn't you guys went to the same high, Joe? You guys,
damn right, Teok Nation.
Yeah,
well, not anymore. Man,
Titan Nation. thanks, guys.
Now,
we are.
Yeah,
appreciate it, Chris. Thanks for tuning in. Episode 167. Play test. You subscribe, rate 5 stars. YouTube on WEI. Appreciate y'all tuning in at Play Test on both Twitter and Instagram. He's Chris Cotillo. Find him on Mass Live, Fenway Rundown Podcast. Take his workshop. Become a journalist yourself. Do it. Appreciate y'all for tuning in. Thanks for episode 167. Peace.